Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Rabbi David Levenkreuz discusses Hanukkah. There is a handout for this podcast, so please check your podcast tool and you'll see the handout as the next episode. Rabbi David Levenkreuz is a member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Director of Special Programs for Pardes. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreuz.
Thank you, Larry. In the next week, at tables throughout the world, people are going to be debating that important issue. What is the greater food, a latke or a sufganiya, a potato pancake or a donut? They're going to be looking at it from different reasons: historical, spiritual significance, dietetic. But what I would like to show to you today is that the ultimate Hanukkah food is not latke or a sufganiya, brilliant as it was for Judaism to develop religious injunctions to eat fried food. I'm going to show you that neither of them should be the quintessential Hanukkah food, but the quintessential Hanukkah food should be tofu. And to try and prove my supposition, what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at four different explanations of the Hanukkah story, see how they are similar, see how they are different, and then we can take it from there. The first section we're going to look at, and people who have a source sheet should look along with me, is from the book of Maccabees, which is part of the Apocrypha. These are books that did not make it into the Bible, but nevertheless are seen as having quality and of being of worth. This is the one that was written closest to the time of the Hanukkah story, and let's see how it understands Hanukkah. Now, on the 25th, and as we go through, we're going to see, when looking at this and with looking at other stories, the different types of issues we're going to be looking at are God, the issue of war and who are the good guys and the bad guys, especially how the Greeks are portrayed, and also how the Hasmoneans and the religious leadership is portrayed. Is there a miracle? How do they relate to a miracle? What language is used, especially what language is used to do with purity? We're going to be using these as spectacles, if you will, to look at each text and to see what we can learn from it. So, Maccabees 4, verses 55 to 59 says, "Now on the 25th day of the ninth month, which is called the month of Kislev, in the 148th year, they rose up in the morning and offered sacrifice according to the law upon the new altar of burnt offering which they had made." As we said, this is speaking to the people at the time. It's talking about the celebration of Hanukkah. In all likelihood, what is going on over here is that in the year that the Hanukkah story happened, the Sukkot offerings were not brought because the temple was defiled and unavailable over Sukkot. The Sukkot offerings were not brought. So what happened instead was that they were brought in at the time of Hanukkah, late. And this is evocative of that. It's also evocative of perhaps the first dedication of the temple, which had been on Yom Kippur, at the very season and on the very day that the Gentiles had proclaimed it. Hagoyim, this is everybody had profaned it. It's the whole world. It was us versus them. It was dedicated with songs, sithens, harps, and cymbals. And so they kept the dedication of the altar 8 days. Moreover, Judah and his brethren, with the whole congregation of Israel, ordained that the days of the dedication of the altar should be kept in their season from year to year for 8 days, from the 25th day of the month of Kislev, with mirth and gladness. We see a nationalistic element in this. The Gentiles, this is what the Jews did. We have a celebration, but we don't see light over here yet. We don't see light. Well, that light will come later. We have emphasis on the fact that the war was won. There's no miracle of the lights. There's no God. There's no purity. Obviously, one has to take in mind that Maccabees is an enormously long book, and I've just chosen a few lines that suit for what I want to say. So do take that in mind. But nevertheless, in general, this is, from today's viewpoint, would be regarded as more historical, less mythical, more dealing with war and with how people chose to celebrate it. So that is the War of Maccabees, the Book of Maccabees. When we get to Al-Hanisim, which is the prayer that is added into the Amidah, the standing prayer, and to Birkat HaMazon, the grace after meals, benching during Hanukkah, and at least parts of it are fairly close to the Book of Maccabees, we see something different. First of all, it's being spoken to God. In terms of where is God, it's being spoken to God. In the days of Matityahu, the son of Yochanan, the high priest, the Hasmonean, so the Hasmoneans are mentioned, and his son, when the wicked Greek kingdom, so it is all the Greeks, before it was all the Gentiles, now it's all the Greeks, rose up against your people Israel to make them forget your Torah and to compel them to stray from the statutes of your will. That is what they did bad. They tried to get us to stop keeping the Torah. You, in your great mercy, stood up for them in the time of their distress. You took up their grievance, judged their claim, and avenged their wrong. You delivered the strong into the hands of the weak, the many into the hands of the few, the impure into the hands of the pure, the wicked into the hands of the righteous, and the wanton into the hands of the diligent students of your Torah. So we have a war here, and we have an emphasis on the war, but the war is described in spiritual language. God fought the war. The judgment, God judged the people. It was the pure into the hands of the impure. The wanton were into the hands of the people who studied Torah. So we definitely have a military victory. But unlike much of the Book of the Maccabees, or most of the Book of the Maccabees, what we have over here is a military victory that is couched in spiritual terms. What we don't have is the miracle of the oil. For yourself you have made a great and holy name in your world, and for your people Israel you wrought a great victory and salvation as this very day. Thereafter your children came to the house, to the holy of holies of your house, cleansed your temple. All this, by the way, people did. Purified the sight of your holiness and kindled light. So we have lights, but not a miracle, in the courtyards of your sanctuary. And they established these 8 days of Hanukkah to express thanks and praise to your great name. The whole issue of describing a war in religious terms is fascinating. It's frumming it up. It's putting it into God's courtyard, if you'll pardon the pun. It reminds me very, very much of a story, no doubt apocryphal, during the War of Independence, when there was fighting over Tzfat. And somebody asked the chief rabbi of Tzfat, "What do you think will happen?" And he said, "There are two ways that we can be saved. One is we can be saved by natural means, and one is that we can be saved supernaturally." And they said to him, "Well, what would natural means be? What would supernatural means be?" And the rabbi said, "Well, natural means is that we'd say Tehillim, we'd say Psalms, and God would save us by natural means." Or he said, "A real supernatural miracle will happen, and the Haganah will come and save us." By inverting this, he was pointing out to the idea that God works in history through people. And this is what the Al-Hanisim is speaking about. There are certain elements of the Exodus. It is hints at the Exodus. It mentions the Hasmoneans and it mentions the war, but it doesn't mention the Hasmoneans too much, possibly because they became corrupt afterwards, and therefore perhaps not such a good thing to mention in a prayer. So we have Maccabees, which is more militaristic and more secular, if you will. Al-Hanisim, which is militaristic but spiritual. And then we have Shabbat 21b, the Gemara. And now we see a very, very different type of approach. First of all, it's in the Gemara of Shabbat, which means that it's being spoken about in the context of halachot, laws of Shabbat. And they discuss a certain issue about Chanukah relating to Shabbat. And then the rabbis ask, Mayi Chanukah? What is Chanukah? Which I like afterwards when it says, the rabbis taught, the Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught. What is going on over here? Who are the authorities? It's not historical. It's not speaking to God. The rabbis taught. They are the ones who give the authority. On the 25th of Kislev commence the days of Chanukah, which are 8, upon which there shall be neither mourning nor fasting. Again, focusing on nowadays, focusing on religious laws, whereas before it was what God did. Now it's in religious laws. For when the Greeks, again, the entire Greeks, Shenichnasu Yevanim Lehechal, when the Greeks entered the temple, they defiled all the oil that was there. Again, it's said in terms of purity. And the bad thing the Greeks did was defile the oil. The war, everything else is less important. What's important is they defiled the oil. It was when the might of the Hasmonean dynasty overcame and vanquished them. So the Hasmoneans are mentioned, but not overly emphasized. That upon search, only a single cruse of undefiled oil sealed by the high priest was found. And here we have it. In some way, it seems as if the high priest is the hero, the person who had enough foresight to say, oh, not the high priest. The high priest sealed it, but there was some person, some anonymous person, who had the ability to hide the oil, who had the foresight to believe that the temple would be restored. I often think that this is the person who was the real hero of the Chanukah story, the person who had enough faith to hide the oil, but this was kosher. It was enough, in it was enough oil for the needs of a single day. A miracle was wrought and it burnt 8 days. The next day they ordained these days a holiday with songs and praise. We have over here a much more miracle-oriented and a much more religious-oriented of everything. So we have historical in the book of Maccabees. We have religio-historical, if you will, in the Alanisim. We have a religious telling of the story in Shabbat 21b. And the Rambam, as is his wont, combines many, many of these different aspects. He says, during the period of the Second Temple, the Greek kings, the Bayit Sheni k'shemalchei Yavan gazru gzerot. To my mind, this is the most fascinating change. Small, but fascinating. No longer is it the Greeks. It's certainly not the Gentiles. It's the Greek kings. It's the kings who did something wrong. The Rambam, we know, is somebody who studied Greek philosophy, Plato, Aristotle. He's not about to demean the entire Greek nation. It was the kings. It was the rulers. They did something wrong. It was not everybody, and it wasn't the philosophers. And again, it's described as what they did wrong is in religious terms, but he goes into much more detail. They outlawed their religion, forbade them to engage in the study of Torah and the practice of mitzvot, laid hands upon their money and their daughters. So it's not only religious, entered the sanctuary and ravaged it and defiled all that had been ritually pure. So we have purity coming up. This caused Israel great anguish till the God of our fathers granted them mercy and delivered them from the hands of their enemies. The Hasmonean high priests prevailed. So we have an emphasis on the Hasmoneans. Killed them and delivered Israel into their hands. They designated a king from among the priests, and the kingdom of Israel was restored for more than 200 years till the destruction. And this is not surprising for the Rambam either. The Rambam was somebody who was very, very interested in the political structure of ancient Eretz Israel. He also was interested in the political structure that will be in his Mishneh Torah, in Sefer Melachim. He describes what the ideal Jewish state will look like in Zman Mashiach. For the Rambam, this is important, the whole idea of a state. He then goes on to say, and Israel prevailed against the enemies and vanquished them. They entered the sanctuary and found only one jar of richly pure oil that was sufficient to burn only one day. They lit the menorah from it. Shmonah yamim, for 8 days, and again. I mean, I love this with the Rambam. Each word is important in the Rambam. There are subtle, small things that he does, which are so significant. He said, Ad shekatshu zetim votzi shemen tahor, till they pressed olives and extracted pure oil. It's wonderful that we had a miracle. Miracles are important. Miracles are amazing. But in the end, people took over. And again, that's the Rambam. People took over, but in the end, people did it. In many, many ways, this one is a mishmash. It's a connection of all of them, but also with the Rambam's small changes, beginning with it being the kings and not the philosophers, ending with it being in the hands, ultimately, of the people to carry on the religion. So three, four very, very different tellings of the story. The famous historian Yosef Yerushalmi speaks about the difference between history and tradition. He says that history is what happened. Memory is how we choose to craft what happened. If ever there was a holiday that was crafted according to the thoughts of the people crafting it, it was Hanukkah. Whether it be military, religious, nationalistic, each person used their own way, their own approach to try and understand what was going on, to the extent that we have very, very different stories. The difference between Shabbat 21b and Maccabees is really two very, very different stories. And today this continues. Many, many people in the United States celebrate Hanukkah as the holiday of religious freedom. In England and parts of Europe, it's the anti-assimilation holiday, the day when we speak about the fact that we're not prepared to blend in with everybody else. In Israel, in the secular Zionist narrative, it became the day of military victory, much like the Maccabees, when the Jews won. Interestingly, and perhaps a little more radical than what we have before, today there are people who identify with the Mityavnim, who say that the story of Hanukkah historically was the story of a group of Jews who tried to impose their will upon other Jews who wanted to have a more Greek-like lifestyle. And they're people who identify not with the Maccabees, but with the people that they opposed. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why I think that Hanukkah is the ultimate tofu holiday. Because a tofu, on the one hand, has essence. It is something. It's not nothing. It's a piece of food. It has food value. It has nutritional value. But it is also absorbs from wherever it is. It becomes whatever it's put into. And so too, Hanukkah absorbs and takes wherever it may be. It is the holiday of multiple meanings. And I always laugh that when the rabbis in Shabbat 21b said, Mai Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah? They never realized that in English it would be read, Mai Hanukkah, M-Y Hanukkah, because indeed, everybody has their own approach to this festival. So ladies and gentlemen, as you eat your tofu, or perhaps you'd like to make your latkes out of tofu, I can't imagine a tofu homentashen, a tofu sufganiyot, but as you eat and as you drink and have a wonderful Hanukkah, may us and all of Am Yisrael have a wonderful Hanukkah. Let us celebrate and enjoy the wonderful diversity that this holiday has for all Jews, and celebrate the fact that we have one story that we share, but many, many different interpretations of that story. Chanukah Sameach and B'tei Avon.
Thank you, Rabbi Levin Cruz. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.